Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Faith Church Podcast. I am your host, Jay Williams, and joining me is a co-host, another host, Robbie Helene.
Hello, Jay Williams.
I feel like we haven't done this together for a while.
We said that last time and then didn't again for a long time. Yes. Yeah. We've gotten out of rhythm a bit.
Yes. We've gotten out of rhythm, like you were on Sunday.
I didn't intend for that to be a segue, but you just went after it, didn't you?
It's a segue.
Sure did.
Chimpanzees riding on a segue. Wait, that's not the same segue?
Different segue.
Different segue. Anyway, this segue is brought to you by Dr. Pepper. Okay, so what happened on Sunday, if people weren't here and did not notice, was that you have to understand, Robbie is a very even keel guy. Robbie is the definition of cool. Robbie does not get rattled. Robbie does not get thrown off. Robbie just kind of rolls with whatever. Anytime, I can't tell you how many times I've seen you, like when you're leading worship, for example, and something goes haywire and you just, without missing a beat, just seamlessly like, oh, the kick pedal just fell off to the side. And so now I don't have that anymore. And like, oh, the pick flew off into the okay, you know, we're just going. And on Sunday you got rattled.
I was a little rattled.
That was amazing. Only for the first little bit. Was only for the first little bit. But so you got up there and your notes were out of order. And it just...
They were not just out of order, Jay. They were in a state of incomprehensible disarray. They were as if they were intentionally shuffled in order to derail me.
They were like shuffled.
It was the only... I am fully responsible for it. It's my own fault. So no one... There's no nefarious... There's no maliciousness by someone on staff who had it out for me. The only one who has it out for me is me. And I, in my disorganization and getting ready, I sabotage myself on my own notes. Honestly, I would have been less rattled if right before I started, my notes suddenly disintegrated in a puff of smoke.
Uh-huh. I can relate to that.
Having no notes at all, I would just go, all right, open your Bibles. We're just going to walk through it. And this is going to be awesome. But having my notes all shuffled up,
and I think
there's almost more than I can handle.
Right, and as I'm sitting there watching it happen,
watching this train wreck take place in slow motion,
still, it was still a very cool train wreck. Like I would have responded in a different way. I think in a less. I mean, that's part of the issue was that I couldn't tell how crazy it was. I didn't realize you'd shuffled. Like they were literally like shuffled. They weren't.
Oh, yeah.
They weren't just like, oh, I'm on page three. Also, you didn't have page numbers on them.
Correct. Lesson learned.
So there's like no way to know until you're actually reading.
Yeah.
And so you were saying it would have been better if they'd, you know, just disintegrated. I was thinking when you were saying that it would have been better if you had tripped on your way up the stage and the pages would have gone scattering, because then at that point everybody would have realized,
right,
holy cow, what just happened? I would have jumped up. You know, we could have handled that, given you a couple of minutes to actually just go over and lay them out and put them in order. But it was so, because of how subtle it was, your coolness actually played against you there, because it seemed like, oh, okay, yep, I got this. And I'm looking at you going, I've known you for almost 20 years, and I'm looking at you going, oh my goodness, I don't know what all is going on with his notes, but he's off to the point where then you end up with a product placement joke. Which people also don't. That's when I knew 100%. Right. That's when I knew 100% that you were rattled, because that is something I would do. That is not something typically. That's something I could totally see you doing in the office. But up there, that's very rare for you.
That's a podcast joke.
Yeah, that's very rare for you to do that in the pulpit. And in fact, you frown upon me when I, you know.
I frowned upon me when I did. So
I just thought, oh my goodness. So anyway, we get that out of the way. And it happens, though. I think it's good. I mean, we say that part of the point of this podcast is that people would see, you know, what goes into this, and then how do we choose what to communicate, what not to communicate, and how things are going, and just so you can see a little bit about what God is doing in the midst of that. And the reality is that, yeah, we, you know, you go up there with a plan, and sometimes the plan you know, sometimes technology doesn't work. And
right.
you were saying that the irony of the whole thing was you went to paper on Sunday because you'd been having issues with technology.
Right. And I thought, I'm just going with the fail safe. What could possibly go wrong with paper?
Right. Well, we found out.
Well,
yeah. So that, I think that is, it's just, there's just something very human about that, you know, that we, this is not always, things do not always go the way that we want them to go. We often communicate things in ways that we wish we had communicated it differently. We often say
For sure.
things, we forget to say things that we really wanted to say. For sure. And
yeah.
we say other things that we wonder, why did I spend 5 or 6 minutes on that when that was not,
right.
you know, there's all these things that happen, and then also technological foibles. But I thought, once you got through that,
once I recovered,
post Dr. Pepper, it was fantastic.
Thank you.
It was
kind.
It was a really fantastic sermon. I just thought it was funny. I will say this, and then we can move on from it. I'd said to Lauren that that a few weeks ago I preached sitting down at the table, and I was trying to channel my inner Robbie of being very calm and cool and just you know, chill. And then I felt like you were channeling your inner Jay and like being chaotic and out of sorts and like, well, I don't know. Maybe I
felt like we were out of balance.
And
you were too Robbie. And so I needed to bring us back into balance again.
It was a little bit of back in balance. This was probably the first time you always make fun of me or laugh about how I have these two voices in my head, and I've got filter. I've got the responsible Jay in my head, and
that's
then
right.
I've got the Jay that's just like, what if we do this? And I got filter Jay being like, I don't think that's, hey, where are you going? You know, like, it's too late. And I felt like that was the Dr. Pepper thing for you, is you had
yeah.
you had a guy in there be like, that is not, whoa, you're talking. Why are you talking? You're saying it. So while
yeah,
he's
responsible
reviewing.
Robbie was trying to figure out if he had the right page on top.
Right.
And meanwhile, irresponsible Robbie's. Cracking wise.
Hey, I got this. You figure out the pages. I got this. I got a great one.
Totally under control. This one's going to slay. What? Why? Don't tell Jamar. It's too late.
So, but do you want to mention, though, what happened after the service?
Yes, my favorite thing about that is someone who is watching online shows up at Faith after the service with an ice cold Dr. Pepper that they gave me as a gift, which was so fantastic.
Was it ice cold?
Of course it was. That's what
of course
that's
it
what
was.
I asked for. Or what I advertised.
Oh, you did. You did. Yeah. So I saw you at the area lunch with a Dr. Pepper,
yeah.
and I thought, what in the world? And you told me that.
Provided,
and I thought that was so wonderful.
By our beloved and caring congregation.
I love that so much.
I did too.
That's so great. All right. Well, you actually had substance in the sermon, and it was it was quite it was
by God's grace.
A great message. It's just been so great to go through Acts. I love it. So I'm just curious, like, was there anything, I mean, I have some thoughts, I have some questions or whatever, but I'm wondering, is there anything that you felt like you kind of left out that you wanted to talk about, or anything that you wanted to clarify? Cause I mean, you definitely cast a vision and, for just in your heart, obviously for the poor and for the disenfranchised, really came out in it as well. But yeah, I didn't know if there's anything.
I appreciate that. That's a good question. I didn't finish necessarily with the sense of I wish I had said this. I mean, I always wish we had more time, just because some of these things feel like I could, you know, we could take a couple weeks on them. Like unpacking what does it look like? Like, we basically get to kind of cast the vision, but don't really get to dig into the, so how's this fleshing out for you? How are we going to do this more actively as a church? Like, what I really want in that moment is the discussion that follows.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I don't want to talk more, but I want to discuss more. So
right.
I don't wish I had more to say, but I wish that like we could follow up that with pulling up a stool and being like, all right, now tell me, congregation, where do you see the needs? Where are you already doing this and you need some help? Where do we see needs in our community? And we had an opportunity to begin to do that a little bit at the area lunch, which is one
yeah.
of the reasons that I really love those area lunches, is the follow-up conversation of getting to talk to people about, so how are we going to do this? What does this look like for us this last week here in Peshtigo, you know, in previous weeks, you know, depending on what area it is. So I'm really growing to value those times, the area and lunch discussions, just because you get to do that right away while it's still fresh, like right after the sermon, to sit down across the table with someone and say, so what about that? Like, how do you feel like you're doing this well? How do you feel like you're not? What are the reasons why we feel like we're not, and can start digging into it?
Yeah, I love that. So good. I think, all right, well then there are several things that I thought were really valuable and important to clear. Your 3 points were great. So, I mean, the first one where you talked about the humility and the wisdom of the leaders on display in this first, it's not really a challenge to the leadership, but it is, I mean, it is like, it's a concern that's been brought forward. But I thought it was really great when you pointed out that all of the names of the people, that these were likely Hellenists. So, and you didn't go too much into that. I wondered, like, okay, where are you going to go with this? But it is a really interesting reminder that even in a situation where you're talking about, these were the apostles. These were people who had walked with Jesus, that Jesus had said, you're the rock. You're my people. You are going to be the ones who lead this out. That not only did they listen, but then when it came to appointing people to deal with the issue, they looked to the people who had been marginalized.
Right.
And that has such huge ramifications in the bigger church. And, you know, when we talk about just all the different ways of how to serve people, and how, when you listen to people who are being missed, and how, well, part of the way that you address that and deal with that is to give a voice to,
that's right,
to the people, not to just say, okay, well, all right, well, we'll fix it, you know, but to actually, give influence and give the ability to do something about it to the people who have been marginalized in it, which is scary to do. Like, it's
really scary
because it means giving over responsibility. It means giving over, sometimes giving over authority. It means, you know, taking a step back and losing some of the influence or the control that you might have had over that. And they did it.
It takes a lot of humility, because you not only have to receive that critique in the first place, but then as you watch those people lead out in that, you have to receive, in a sense, the constant passive critique of, oh, I wasn't doing that. Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't try that. Oh, I didn't even see that. Mm. And you have that ongoing passive critique of, am I okay with acknowledging all the ways that I wasn't doing this well, which is why there was a problem in the first place. And I find it so amazing that the apostles' response, because again, I mentioned on Sunday, but of all the people that I feel like I would have grace for being a little controlling,
right,
keeping it tight, keeping it close to home, would be the guys who are like, yeah, but we're like, Jesus literally said, I'm counting on you to do this. Like, right. He picked us. Like,
right.
Like, there would be a legitimate argument for,
yeah,
this really has to stay in house, like with just us, because Jesus told us it starts with us. But they saw, like, they took him literally when he said, like, we don't lead the way the world leads. And so, like, that had to filter into their response of, well, we don't lead how the world leads, so obviously our response isn't circle the wagons and tighten up control and make sure that we're in charge of this, but we've got to, like,
or blame,
give this away, just like Jesus gave it away to us, right?
Right.
He hands the stewardship to us, and then they hand that stewardship away. And then what I love is how, like, obviously they didn't, well, maybe the Holy Spirit told them this, but there's no indication that they had any idea of what was, like, right around the corner in terms of persecution and then, like, the scattering of the believers.
Mm-hmm.
But you just gave all this authority to people who are going to be scattered out across the whole empire. And then we get to see over the rest of Acts what God does with that. So like, that wasn't their missionary strategy. That was just, like, good self-sacrificial, humble leadership in the moment. And then God's like, right on. Now, guess what I can do with that? And it's more explosive than any strategy they would have come up with.
Yeah, and they, you know, yeah, they could have been defensive. They could have blamed the Hellenists for their situation, right, and said like, "Well, learn Aramaic, like, right, you know, or you guys need to do something. We're not changing this or whatever." Right. They could have. There's so many different ways, but
and the way Luke describes it, like, you could probably argue, and they didn't present the complaint in the best way. Because the word he uses, right, there is like grumbling.
Right.
Like they were like murmuring.
Yeah. Yep.
And so instead of like bringing it to the apostles in the best possible way, Luke kind of hints at like there was a murmuring among the people, a complaining among the people that this thing wasn't happening. And even in that circumstance, they have the humility to go, hey, that doesn't mean that the concern is illegitimate.
Exactly. Yeah. And that right there, I think, is a really great point. And anybody that's ever in ministry leadership at all, whether you're leading a small group or pastoring or whatever, you have to deal with the fact that a lot of times, most times, or very frequently, criticisms are not brought in the most godly of ways.
No.
And so the ability to separate the mode from the content is incredibly important. And I know you've had these situations. I've had countless situations in ministry where I've had to, where God has had to like humble me in a way to say, okay, the way that this was brought up, whether it was grumbling or complaining or accusations or it's through gossip or whatever, that does not invalidate the concern that has been brought forward. And so that's a constant thing of, okay, I need to listen to what's being said here. And then there have been times where there have been some times in discipling relationships where I'll deal with the concern. And then after dealing with the concern, then circling back and saying, hey, just so you know, this is a better way to bring these things up. Yeah. You know, this is a more Christ honoring way to express these concerns. And so, so it kind of goes both ways. Like it does not, we don't get a free pass to ignore critique because it's done in a sinful way. But the fact that the critique is valid doesn't justify sinful behavior.
That's exactly
either.
Right. That's
so, exactly right. So we have to always be mindful of that, of, okay, I've got the content of my critique, but then I also am accountable for the way that I bring this up. But yeah, that's a really good point. I also thought you did a great job of dealing with what has been, you know, ever since the church started, but certainly in the last few hundred years, and certainly in the last 100 years or so, the idea of, you know, the gospel, the ministry of the word, and then you know, this ministry of service, and and like sometimes we talk about like the social gospel and these different things, but the question of like, are we most about preaching the word and sharing the gospel, or are we most about meeting relieving suffering and meeting people's felt needs? And it's been in the last 100 years or so that those have been separated. Like for most of the time in the church, they've not been seen, I would say they've not been seen as separate things, but we certainly live in an era where to care about the poor and to care about that could bring with it the accusation of not taking the word seriously. And I thought you did a really good job of pointing out that the apostles were not saying, they fully understood it was critically important that these widows got food.
Yeah.
I mean, it was critically important. They also understood that they had to be faithful to man their post. What I think is incorporated in that is this idea of they understood the body of Christ, and they unapologetically said, "This is what we've been charged to do. We need to do this," in a very Nehemiah type way of saying, "Like, look, I don't know whether that's real or not, but I can't stop doing what I'm supposed to be doing here. That wouldn't be faithful." Which again goes to their humility, that they didn't believe that they had to do everything.
Right. Right.
Like sometimes you feel like you get bonus points for being the guy that does everything, but really what you're showing is that you think you have to do everything and that other people can't do it. And so they really, that distinction of, it wasn't that they were saying that was beneath them. It was that they were saying that this is what we have been called to do. And so for all of us to be faithful and to be the body of Christ, we got to do what we're called to do. And then we need other people to do this to make sure that we are, as a whole family, doing what we're called to do. So I thought that was, I don't know. I thought that was, it was well stated to hold that intention, because it does sound in the text, just a plain reading of the text does kind of sound like they're saying, well, that's beneath us. Like there's a little bit of that in the English translation that can feel like that, but that is not, that's not at all what they are communicating.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think in the broader context of that passage, you see that it's not at all what they're thinking, they wouldn't have responded the way they're responding if they didn't believe that that was essential.
Right.
Like, it's really more of a sense of like, well, this has to be done, but we can't do that. So how do we do that? And then they propose this idea that everyone says, yes, that's obviously awesome. And no one responds with, oh, because the apostles are too busy reading the Bible and teaching us the word that we don't know. No, they're like, yes, like we get it all. Like there's this sense of like, they want to gather to be taught by the apostles. They know the only way they can do that is if they're continuing to spend time in the word and in prayer. And so they're not wanting the apostles to stop doing that. That's what they're gathering to hear from them. And then their response to that. And so like, if you read the whole thing and then come circle back around and see the responses, you get much more of a sense of, like we can't, but what if this results in not having the word anymore? And instead it's it's them holding that intention where it's so easy for us to be a little more binary, right? To be, it's an either or, it's we're about the word, or we're about, you know, serving the community. And the apostles couldn't separate those things because the word, the manifestation of the word is in love of others and service of others. And so, like, you get much more of a, I read it with the tone of like, well, we can't stop doing this, but obviously we need to do this other thing. And so what do we do? And so they come up with a solution that everyone is thrilled about,
which man, rarely
can you
happens.
Even imagine that? Like the 100%. Whole church goes, yes, great idea. We love it.
I mean, just because I've never experienced that doesn't, that may have to do with the quality of my ideas, but I think the two pieces of evidence that make it really clear to me that your interpretation of that is accurate is one is the unanimity of the response.
Yeah.
So we just had people grumbling and complaining to them, and now everyone sees this.
Yep.
Both Hellenist, you know, and the Jewish Greeks, the Hebrews that were there, like they all agreed, yes, this is a great plan. Which, by the way, says something about the Aramaic speaking Jews from Jerusalem, that they also agreed, yes, that makes sense. You got seven of them, they're all Hellenists. Yep. That makes sense.
Yes.
There wasn't a fear of, well, but then what about our widows?
Right.
Like, are they going to start getting ignored? There wasn't a sense of a fear of retribution or of favoritism. It was, oh, man. So that, to me, communicates that everybody, when it was brought to them, thought, oh, that's not good. Like, we got to deal with this. And so they were happy to see a solution to that. So that was one. And the other one was the qualifications that were put on the people who are going to be in charge. It wasn't like they just said, oh, I don't know, just grab a few people and like go hand out food. It was like, no, these have to be people who are respected, who are filled with the Spirit and have this kind of faith. And that will be seen as that it just, that makes it really clear. Hmm. And I think what that goes into is, you know, really kind of what was, your third point, when you talk about like the first organizational decision of the church here, it has to do with caring for the poor, and it carries with it this idea of a sense of responsibility. So the response of the apostles was that since we obviously have this responsibility, how do we solve the problem? Which is very different than I think when we look at the culture around us, and we don't often start there. We often start with, well, what could we do about it? And I think that's an important step. The first step is to all be in agreement. Well, obviously, this is our responsibility.
Yeah.
So now the question is, how do we go about it?
That's right.
Which then protects us from saying, well, that's too big of an issue, or it's too big of a problem, or, well, maybe someday we'll do something like that. You have to start with like, well, obviously, we need to do this.
Yeah.
So now let's figure out the best way.
Right.
I don't know if you, like, how do you wrestle with that in a culture now? Because then, I'm hesitant to just say, well, it was obviously so much easier then, but there were certain things that made that easier. One was the clear separation of people were joining the church, and so there was no formal membership, because if you were meeting with them, you were a part of them. And then there was also not all of the red tape of government programs and all these different things, and you were dealing with a much simpler economy. You know, you didn't have retirement funds, you didn't have fixed incomes, you didn't have Social Security, you didn't have cell phone bills and, you know, car payments and all this stuff. Is basically people needed to eat and they needed to stay warm and, you know, have water. And that was essentially what needed to happen. So it was very clear, like, okay, well, these needs need to be met. How do we deal with that then in a much more complex economic world where someone's need might, you know, look very different? You know, certainly if we're seeing someone that's hungry and I have a loaf of bread, that's very straightforward and we can do that, but it's more complex than that.
It is and it isn't. It is more complex than that. Our culture is certainly much more complex than that. We also have kids around us who don't have winter clothes. And we have kids, you know, we have families who can't afford to buy a meal all 7 days of the week. Like, we also have the things that are that simple and that straightforward and that cut and dry, like that easy. So, I always struggle with starting at the most complicated aspect of it and then disavowing all of it, just saying, well, because I've chosen the most obscure and complicated issue and proven that it's too obscure and complicated to come up with a solution, we dismiss all of it, as opposed to saying, well, at the very least, we're going to be a community where there's not a single kid in this school who doesn't have a winter coat, because that's ridiculous. We're going to be, you know, we're going to make sure that there's not a single family that's trying to decide between rent or food, because that's ridiculous. Like, they need both a roof over their heads and a meal on their table, and start there. And then once we have solved all of those problems, then start wrestling with the issues where we go, okay, so now what do we do when, you know, this person has this, is unable to make their insurance payment? And we go, okay, well, that feels a little more nuanced, because that's not exactly life or death, but we also live in a context and a culture where if I break my leg, that could put me on the street if I'm living paycheck to paycheck, because if I don't have insurance and I don't have $10,000 to pay for the ambulance ride and all that stuff, like, so that does get a little messier. But I would like to start having those conversations after we have already fixed all of the easy ones leading up to that, as opposed to going, yeah, but we're never going to answer that insurance issue because it's just too nuanced. So the kids should still keep going to school with no coats. Like, that's
right.
I'm not like, and I'm, and I, we don't do that intentionally, right? We don't say, like, provide... I don't care if children are eating. We don't say that. We just, because this issue feels so huge, and we've in some senses complicated it ourselves, right? Because we've added political aspects to it, and we've added all, like, our culture is so different in good ways and in bad ways. You know, it's a good thing that if we have a drought, we don't all die, because we have we have infrastructure set up, right? So that's a win. So there's some things that are really good about it.
I mean, the infrastructure, you just think about it. We could have a drought and most people would be fine.
It's going to make things harder. It's going to make some things more expensive, but
most people wouldn't be fearing for your life. Whereas there was a time where that would mean the vast majority of the population would be in peril. They would be in life or death situations. So I appreciate all that, and that really, you brought up there was another point you made in the sermon that I just was hoping you'd maybe unpack just a little bit, which is, you made the really great point that we have basically abdicated our responsibility. Mm-hmm. Like, we've handed over, you said something to the effect of the world has taken responsibility of what was ours to steward, partly because we handed it over. Hmm. I paraphrased that just because I couldn't write fast enough.
That's pretty close. I think that's pretty much verbatim.
Give me a little bit more on that. Like, what do you mean we handed, like, that we've handed this? Because I would add, too, that, and then we've criticized the world. So it feels like we've handed the responsibility. It was a responsibility given to me, you know, or to us. Like, I was going into metaphor mode there, but this responsibility was given to us. We handed it over to another group of people, to the world, and said, well, no, you deal with this. And then we criticize the way that they're dealing with it.
Yeah.
And yeah. Am I oversimplifying that?
I wish you were.
So, in what way do you see us having handed it over?
I mean, I think that was a gradual process. It's not like a large group of people woke up one morning and said, we're going to abdicate our responsibility for this and then make fun of people for not doing it as well as we are not doing it. It starts with, you know, churches, the church creating the first orphanages and the first hospitals.
Right.
Right. Which is awesome. And the church, actually, it starts with the church taking in orphans and the sick and the marginalized, right, bringing them into their homes. And then as that grew and as the church grows and then the need grows, they start going, okay, we need to, you know, we want other ways to do this. We can't just, you know, bring individual sick people into individual houses. We could create one place where we can bring equipped people to serve more of them. And then the hospital is created in the late 300s. And then the church sees it as their responsibility to facilitate that, to staff that, because this is our responsibility to care for these people. And we're just cooperating together to do that. And then over time, slowly, you know, government starts to get involved and, you know, tax money starts going into that. And rather than inviting the homeless into your home, we create a homeless shelter and kind of systematize how we do that. And then gradually fewer and fewer churches are participating in that, more and more, you know, either government or other, you know, secular nonprofits, and the scale kind of tips. And then we start to get to a place of saying, like, well, we get further and further detached from that. Like, the idea of bringing the homeless people into my home is a million miles away. The idea of me being the one who's serving at the homeless shelter feels a little arm's length, right? And I don't even have to, right? Because the local government is taking care of that, or local nonprofits are taking care of that. And so I don't feel that same urgency that I'm the one who has to be doing that. And so I let someone else do it. But then our nature is to tend to think we would do it better than anyone else. And so then it kind of flips. And then I start looking at the way that they are doing it and saying, well, they're not doing a good job of that. And I think what we need to improve on is, because we're not always wrong, right? Because like we talked about earlier, even if you're saying it the worst possible way, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're wrong.
Nope.
Our solution to that should be stop complaining and fix it.
Well, right. Yeah. And that's the part of the criticism. And I've heard this in a lot of different places and I understand it, but that feeling like, so I will see if I can articulate this in a way that makes sense, that as it makes sense in my head. But not only are we criticizing it, the church has a reputation of then handing responsibilities over, like you just articulated there, which is really great. Because, yeah, it's not just one day you just decide, oh, well, let's have the government do this. But little by little, it becomes less urgent or the needs are less in front of you. But then you say, you kind of hand it over. We hand it over to the secular world. But then say, I can't help with that because that's secular.
Right.
So now I can't volunteer in that program because it's secular. You're like, well, but we're the ones that handed it to them.
Right. And I made it secular because I gave it over. I gave it to you.
Right. So. And that's it. You know, and it's understandable. Look, we see this in so many different areas and we all deal with this. We all are, we all kind of are captive to the tyranny of the urgent, right? This idea that, like, well, once you take off the pressure of this, well, I don't have to worry about that. You know, and I see it, you know, people know I coach youth sports, and there's this thing, the more organized youth sports has gotten, the fewer like fathers teaching their sons how to play catch there are, because it's just this feeling of like, well, I can just take them to this program, they'll probably do a better job. And we've talked about that a lot in the church with children's ministry, that like there's nothing more important for a child's spiritual development than for their parents to disciple them. But then we supplement that with children's ministry, but that ends up kind of little by little, it's lowered the sense of urgency. There's the feeling that, well, I'll take my kid to Awana or to Sunday school, and that's where they'll learn the stuff. Then I don't need to do it. And it's not because the parent doesn't care about their kid. It's not because they don't care about their discipling. They just feel like, well, it's just not as urgent. Like, I at least know that they're getting that, and they're probably getting, it's probably better there anyway. And so little by little, we kind of hand that over. But then the picture of that would be, then it's funny when the parent is yelling at the coach about how their kid is swinging a bat.
Right.
And you're like, well, dude, you brought your kid. Like, what do you want me to do? I'm doing the best I can in the time that I have, but you actually could be the biggest influence of that. And same way in the church, like if when the parents look to the church and say, well, why isn't my kid being discipled? We've just gotten to a place where we've forgotten the first level of responsibility. Right. So there is certainly, when I think about, say, orphans in the area, look, if we did not have these systems that we have, then we would have a bunch of children out on the streets. And in other countries, that is what happens. And so I think so there's this strange kind of tension that happens, that if that was the case, if we had dozens of children walking around our streets in Peshtigo or Marinette begging for food, I think that that would raise the level of urgency of all the churches. That's and they would say, we cannot let this happen. And I think you'd see a lot more families adopting children. It's because that doesn't happen, because those children are taken into a system and they're put, like, we don't see that.
Yeah.
We think it's kind of an out of sight, out of mind. And we obviously don't want to go to a system where we say, okay, well, then just send them all out in the street, because then we'll actually respond. In some ways, we have to capture the both and of this. Like, and I think it goes back to what you said about the not getting discouraged by the complicated. Like, start with the most basic of things. I think we need to make sure that we are participating in these solutions while like these other things are going on. Like, it should be an addition to, it should not lessen our involvement. It should assist or help, and we should be able to mutually have some kind of mutual benefit there, where we're working together. Yes. Because the reality is, the problems in our culture are too big. Even like, if our church just fully tried to throw everything we had at these problems, like, we wouldn't be able to solve all them. Like, we need whole communities, which includes government organizations and secular organizations and other churches and all of it.
And what if it's the church that's leading out in that? So when you go to First Baptist Vallejo in California, what you're going to find is the community leader is coming to them to talk about solutions for dealing with their homeless population, because they've got 200 of them at their lunch every single weekday. And so, like, because they're the ones leading out in that, the community around them takes the cues from them in how to care for them better, how to support them better, because they're the ones leading out. So in that community, they really are going, well, who do we have to help? Because that church down the street is the one doing all of it. And so the city's coming to them saying, how do we help you to do what you guys are accomplishing in this community here? That's how we fix the system, right? We fix the system by we go out and we do that thing. We so flood the apparatus that is available to us that and in some sense, what I love about this church is in some aspects we've done that. Like, we have an extraordinarily good reputation with areas of of the county here that are working in with kids from hard places and whatnot, because our people are going, our people are loving them well. They're good volunteers. They support the mm-hmm. the people that they are volunteering under. And so we have, as a church, have a really great reputation in our community. And they do come to us and ask us for help and for support, because we've demonstrated we care about you, we care about the kids that you care about. And like that's so I do want to make sure I made sure I said it on Sunday, but I just want to reiterate, in all of this, I don't want anybody to hear me saying no one in the church is doing anything.
No,
the church still is doing extraordinary things every day. The capital C church, right? You know, around the country and around the world, is doing extraordinary things in caring for the least of these. I just want to bring to our attention where we see complacency in these things. We need to bring change.
Yes. Yeah, we just need to be reminded of that. I think because we live in a culture and in a country that has, by all accounts, as far as countries across the history of the world, like, we do care for the poor and for the marginalized. Like, there's a lot of systems in place for that. It's not perfect. It's nowhere near perfect. Right. But it is there. But then, like I said, that takes it a little bit out of sight, out of mind. And so we do need to remind each other then that there are still hungry kids in our county. There are children who are in unsafe environments. There are people who cannot afford to buy food. There are there's all these different things that are going on. And so we have to remind ourselves to not get complacent. Mm-hmm. And then I love the idea of, like, the way that we can take back some of that responsibility and have some of that influence is to partner in it, is to be involved.
Yeah.
You know, if you go back
be the best volunteer at that organization and bring all your friends.
Right.
Also be the best volunteers in that organization.
Yeah. Yeah. In which we've had that in certain situations where we have, I wish that some of our volunteers, like, whether, like, CASA is a really great example of, and we've asked for more volunteers for that, that if people knew, if the volunteers, I hope the volunteers who have volunteered in that know that their faithful presence and service in that may seem small to them, or they may feel like it's not noticed. It is. And when all of those get added together, it's massive. It's a massive thing. And some of the other areas that we've been able to be a part of, whether it's in the schools or the homeless population or the prisons or wherever, it matters. And so,
it does.
So we want to encourage you to do that. Like, if you have a heart, like, one of the things that we want to be careful of is that, yes, there are a ton of needs and it can feel really overwhelming.
Yes.
But the good news is, every single one of us, and I'll talk to you, podcast listener, God has given you everything that you need and all the time that you need to accomplish everything that he has called you to. And so you may, like, no one of us and no single church can solve all of the issues, but maybe God has placed it on your heart in a specific area. Maybe when you heard that sermon on Sunday, or even in listening to this, you think, this is an area where I have a special affection for or special concern for in our community, then my encouragement would be to be faithful in that. And if you don't know where to serve or where to jump in and help, then talk to us. We have a lot of connections, a lot of relationships in the community, and we can help you. We can connect you with someone who would be thrilled to know that you care about this problem or this issue, and that you want to be a part of the solution. You want to help. And what we don't want to be is, we never want to be the people who are sitting on the sidelines just, like, complaining about the people on the field. Like, we want to be on the field and we want to be part of that. And then from within that, we can influence and encourage and direct all those things to the glory of Christ, to demonstrate how the kingdom functions and how kingdom people live.
Well said.
That was like me landing.
You landed that plane like a boss.
Bye. No? All right. Well, if you do have any questions or anything else that we are here, you can always reach us at connect@faithpeshtigo.com. And as always, we are appreciative of your time in listening. Until next time, grace and peace.